When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Another foul on board. His third for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Izzo's dying for a moving screen.
That dreaded moving screen.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn, here with Dylan Burkhart. Dylan, we are, 3 weeks in to the season? We are on the doorstep of the ACC Big Ten Challenge, perhaps the final.
No, perhaps.
We'll talk about that.
Right?
It's done, right?
Yeah,
I don't know. You never know if there's going to be like a last minute somehow. I don't see it coming.
Cats said it's over. They're going to ACC.
Oh,
I only saw
Underwood's comment. I didn't see Cats dropping confirmations, but good for him.
So
yeah,
now,
TV contracts rule everything. Not
what should the Big Ten do instead?
I don't know. Are they going to do something instead?
I assume not, but that sucks. Is there something they could do? Like the ACC is going right into this other ESPN deal, right, with the SEC.
Right.
That'll be a
right.
Pretty good basketball. Everyone will watch. The Big Ten's just going to sit at home, do nothing this week? Like, I don't know. What
do they – wasn't the SEC with the Big 12?
Yes, they do a challenge, I think, in the regular season more, like in January.
I mean, if I don't know. Would the SEC or would the Big 12 be interested?
But they're not
like a
ESPN,
Gavitt type.
They're an ESPN league also, right? So do you just do the Gavitt games twice and just say, well, Fox pays both of us. Let's just play each other over and over again. That seems like, would you do more conference games? Like that's almost
maybe
what
I
could see.
Maybe the A-10.
Oh yeah. Everyone will be tuning in for that.
I don't know. That'd be nice. A little Ohio State, Richmond, a little Minnesota, St. Bonaventure.
Why that'll never happen?
Michigan Fordham, not doing it for you.
It's not. That's. It'd be great for the A-10.
It would be a little home and home.
It'd be great for the A-10. It'll be
about
interesting.
Time,
though,
it's about time Iowa played a true road game at St. Louis.
Well, what I will say though is, I feel like the ACC Big Ten Challenge is really a fundamental piece of what non-conference basketball was in this league for the last. However long, two decades, whatever it's been. So it'll change kind of what we think about the league and how it plays out each season. So it will be a big change more than what channel games are on. That's like something that actually impacts, I guess, the league and how it's viewed and just how the season plays out. Cause there's been huge games within that ACC Big Ten Challenge that have kind of shaped where things end up, and it won't be the same without it.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the Big Ten schedule-wise has obviously been successful in its methodology or whatever you want to call it. They, they got, in terms of NCAA bids, they usually, if it's like a toss-up, like, oh, they'll either get 6 or 7, they get 7. Or they'll either get 8 or 9, they get 9. And that always, that always speaks to kind of the larger math of it. And that goes back to scheduling. And you're right, it's, premier spots and MTEs, it's the Big Ten ACC, it's the Gavitt, and then some occasional teams that are willing to schedule a couple games, but there isn't that much of that. Like, how many teams are scheduling home and homes in this conference? There's not many because there's no need to.
Yeah, that's true. And there's so many, there's just more and more neutral showcase opportunities, right? You have MSU in the Champions Classic, you have Michigan in this Jordan thing. Like, there's just games like that all over the place. I think Duke and Iowa are playing a one-off in New York. Like, there's just people are looking to those kind of games. And I think those are the smart type of games to schedule from a like NCAA tournament maximization perspective. Yeah. But it also sucks because I think home and homes are really what make the sport awesome in so many ways, especially in November and December. So I'll miss that. It doesn't seem like it's coming back that direction. And I don't know. Do you do what? I don't know what else the Big Ten can really do as far as a scheduling agreement when there's not really an obvious pair who's aligned media wise, right? So it would be tough, right? I think, to do a conference wide deal.
Right. Like, under what circumstance are you getting North Carolina going to Indiana? Are you getting Ohio State with a chance to go to Duke? Like, these games, you're right. I don't, because if those are all, you know, if they're all in bed together now, the ACC and the SEC and et cetera, well, you know, they're not going to be wanting to add random games. Yeah, that's right. They're not going to be wanting to just add random games against, you know, Big Ten teams. So there's a larger story there, and maybe some enterprising writer will dig into it. But today we are going to, this is an, kind of an annual deal that we typically do at this time of year where we kind of, how would you describe this, Dylan?
We're doing the power ranking draft. We're doing Big Ten power rankings
draft,
but we draft back and forth. So it's not your ranks or my ranks. We go alternating picks, and we're ranking, I think what we said is the best teams as we think right now. So it's not about resume strictly, or it's not about like who you think could be the best. It's just like, who's the best team right now? It's not, it's arbitrary, obviously, but that's the fun of it. And I think we've seen enough of most of these teams now to be able to bake a take on something more than just like off-season prognostication. Right. And I think there's some interesting things to pick apart when we go across the league, because there's a lot of teams in this league who have had a really good opening 3 weeks.
Yeah. And there's the conversation of who's really good on November 28th is always interesting, because I think larger picture, we would probably be ranking these teams differently in terms of like our long-term stock. But right now, who's playing the best, who has done the most work is always an interesting thing to look at. So basically the format is I will take, you know, what I think is the best team right now, and then Dylan will take what he thinks is the next best team. And then I will take what's, I think, what I believe to be the best left on the board, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. This is not exactly rocket science for any of our listeners. So, but it's a good chance to talk about every school, which is kind of the point of this podcast. So I'm starting off, Dylan,
I think
right?
I'm taking first pick.
You're getting first pick. Oh, of course. Okay. That's easy.
Is that all right?
Give me the hard one. All right. Yeah, all right, whatever. Go ahead.
I'm going with the Purdue Boilermakers,
yeah,
also called my preseason pick to win the league.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue went and dominated in Portland, beat West Virginia, beat Gonzaga, beat Duke, basically 20-point wins over top 10 teams. Don't see that all that often. Zach Edey is every bit the monster that we thought he could be. And honestly, like, the freshman guards have been awesome for them. The depth has been like really like a legitimate weapon for this team. And it just all seems to be fitting together right now. I don't know what bad thing you could really say about how good Purdue has been at this point. I think they're pretty much the easy first pick. Now, what I'll say, though, they started really, really hot last year, too, if you remember. They went to Mohegan Sun and they beat UNC and Villanova. And it was sort of a similar thing we were saying now. So it'll be interesting to see how this team grows and develops. But I think there's a lot to like right now.
Yeah. And I, you know, you bring up that it's your preseason pick to win the league.
The only
very good about pick yourself.
To win
now,
Purdue. I'm going to celebrate in late November instead, so I don't have to wait till March.
I feel like I've seen this movie sometimes, though, you know, and it's so this is the fourth time under Painter that Purdue has started 6-0. The other years, 2010, 2016, and last year, So 2010, they got out to 14-0. That year finished 29-6, 14-4, won the league. Sweet 16 lost to Duke. 2016, they got out to 11-0, finished 26-9, 12-6, did not win the league. First round loss to Arkansas Little Rock. And then last year, finished 29-8, 14-6, did not win the league. Sweet 16 lost to St. Peter's.
Lost the league by a game, to be fair.
True story.
Like they were, it's not like they weren't good.
Absolutely. I thought for most of the year that they were the best team in the league, and they just didn't win the league, and they lost to St. Peter's. It's just kind of the way it ended. But, yeah, I mean, it's the obvious top pick here. They have four straight top 60 KenPom wins, and they own, three. I just mapped this out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They have three of the top seven wins in the Big Ten thus far, with their wins over Gonzaga, Duke, and West Virginia. So pretty darn good. The freshmen are, I think, Edie is Edie. Edie is the story. Edie's like basically a national player of the year candidate right now, let alone
front run.
Big Ten player of the year candidate. But the more interesting thing is the freshman. It's Braden Smith. It's Fletcher Lawyer being their second and third leading scorer. That's what they were going into the Duke game. I don't know if that moved at all. But point is, after how many ever games, you know, I don't think anyone would have projected Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer to be their second and third leading scorers. And is that a good thing? Or is that a... Like, how do you look at that, right? Because I also think that you and I, at least, probably would have projected more out of Caleb First, Mason Giles, Brandon Newman, et cetera.
Yes
or no?
Mason Gillis, I think, is what he is. He just sits in and he can shoot mm-hmm. and create spacing. Like, that's fine. I didn't really think, okay, he's going to break out into something else. Sure. I think the guy to focus on, though, is Ethan Morton, who's really just sort of this elite glue guy. He does a lot of the point guard duties, right? He's got a 37% assist rate. He just kind of stuffs all the stats except scoring. And I think he kind of holds this all together to sort of integrate those freshman guards with Edie, right? And so I think he deserves a ton of credit. And the reality is, we knew that Trey Kaufman Wren could be a good player. Mason Gillis could be a good player. Caleb First was awesome against Duke. But the reality is, those guys aren't going to do what the guards do, right? They don't have many other guards. I don't think either of us were that high on David Jenkins as a transfer. He was basically just mm-hmm. kind of an insurance depth piece. So it had to be the guards, and they've been shockingly good. Like, maybe they hit a rough spot, but it's hard to not like how well they've been playing. And you don't need them to be these sort of elite, take over the game players, right? Because really all you have to do is get the ball to Zach Edey and he can take care of the rest. And he's been the KenPom MVP in every game they've played. He's playing like regularly 32, 33 minutes. That's probably more than I would have even thought possible. I was thinking like 28 and he could be really good. So mm-hmm. they've been awesome. They're actually running through, there's only six games, but a higher percentage of their offensive possessions are ball screens than last year. Which I think is really interesting when you consider they had Jaden fucking Ivy last year running ball screens. Right. And now they have Braden Smith. And Braden Smith has actually been a little more involved in that regard. And it just shows, I just think there's a way the offense fits around just only having Edie. Whereas before, they were always juggling all these different things, right? Okay, we're going to have these Jaden Ivy possessions. We're going to have these Travion Williams possessions. We're going to have these Zach Edey possessions. And I don't know if last year's team ever found a sort of niche or a identity offensively because it was always doing so many different things. And to be fair, they were still really good right there. The second best offense in the country. But I think that led to some inconsistency along the way.
Right. And so coming up for Purdue, let's pull that up real quick before we move on to my pick. They get one of the layups of layups in the ACC Big Ten with a game at Florida State. Florida State is abysmal. They have one win this year over Mercer.
Just got drilled by Nebraska
by 20. They have losses to Siena, Troy and Stetson. And basically, like, Purdue is through its non-conference. They have a game against Davidson. Where is that? Indy. But they've put in the work.
And they have Minnesota and Nebraska as
So they're going to roll. They're going to probably get out to, it's going to be another one of those 11, 12, 13, 14-0 starts, whatever. Purdue's going to be a top five team probably at the turn of the calendar. So it'll be another kind of, okay, Matt Painter, Final Four, like get ready for the same conversation all over again, right?
Yeah. Or it's just the best coach having the best team in the league again. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. That's perfectly reasonable. But they don't play another top 20 KenPom team as of right now until January 5th against Ohio State.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm up. I'm going to take my preseason favorite.
Oh.
Yes. I'm going to take Illinois because I haven't seen anything to tell me otherwise. You know, yes, people are going to stomp their feet right now and say, what about Indiana? Blah, blah, blah. Indiana has one win inside the top 250 in KenPom. And it was a two-point win at Xavier that they very nearly pissed away at the end. It was a good win. Don't get me wrong. And you don't get to change wins and losses. However, like, it was a good win for Indiana. They did not blow me away in that game. Whereas what I saw from Illinois, even in a loss to Virginia, I thought was just as impressive as anything I've seen from Indiana. And the win over UCLA kind of showed me something. We went really deep into Illinois last week. I'd recommend anyone kind of go back and listen to that if really interested and kind of breaking down what they did in Vegas. But I really like Illinois. I liked Illinois' pieces coming into the year. I still like them. I like the very kind of variability in their style. Terrence Shannon is playing like, you know, a first team all Big Ten guy. You mentioned the freshman guards from Purdue. Well, the freshman guards at Illinois have some juice behind them as well. Coleman Hawkins is doing everything. Dane Danger is a super interesting piece that we talked about last week. Yeah, like a loss to Virginia is nothing to sneeze at. So, yeah, why would I talk myself out of Illinois right now?
So I'm fine with that. I had them a little lower, mostly just because I'm a little bit in the want to see more games, want to see how this sort of Illinois team holds up. I'm fascinated by the game at Maryland on Friday. I think like they'll be underdogs in that game. And I think you can make a case that Maryland's playing every bit as well as Illinois. You can make a case that Indiana or Ohio State is on that same level. So I don't think it's a bad pick, but I think I just want to kind of see how this thing holds up here, because I don't know. Like, it's really that one game where they played awesome against UCLA and won, but Terrence Shannon also hit 8 of 9 threes. So what does this team look like when Terrence Shannon doesn't make eight threes against a good team?
For about 36 minutes against Virginia, they looked pretty good and just came completely undone at the end of that game. But they were basically even with Virginia, and I thought they looked good against the team that makes you look bad, right?
And that's kind of as like, are we sure? Like, Virginia is another team where I want to see a little more too. They were not a good team for the last 2 years.
Sure.
Now, maybe they're this awesome top five team, but maybe they're not. And I don't know for sure.
But we have 3 weeks of games to look at, right? And part of it is like, I bought Illinois early. Why would I?
That's fair. You know, I'm not saying it's wrong.
Doesn't make any sense to punt now. But yeah, Maryland game is super interesting because I'm really high on Maryland too. And they've given us no reason to think otherwise as well.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where how do you grade out against like two games against really good teams versus a team that's played maybe 3 or 4 or 5 sort of top 50 type teams, right? Like, how do you weigh one great performance against UCLA and a good loss against Virginia compared to a team like Maryland that went and drilled St. Louis, beat Miami by a bunch, like has a little more, I don't know. Those teams aren't as good. I think you can go either way. I'm not picking Maryland next either. So I'm just saying, like, an example.
I got you.
All right. I'm taking Indiana next. And I think you do make the fair case that they haven't really played anyone and their bye games have been horrific, right? Like, they have five games against 250 or worse teams. Like, these aren't even decent bye games. They're just kind of joke games. That being said, they did win at Xavier. Xavier looks like a good team. That's going to be a Q1 win. That's a good win. They're also just, I think, showing more depth and talent than they have in recent years, right? Like, they're not just beating these teams. They're just beating them by 50. They're really overwhelming them. They're getting contributions from guys like Malik Renew, and that we didn't really, they weren't guaranteed, right? So that changes what I think about this team. But still, they've played the 356th most difficult schedule. So I'm a little worried about this pick too, just because I want to see it, right? Like, UNC, very overrated in the polls. This is more of a top 20 UNC team than the preseason number one, which is a whole nother story. But, like, they can also go and win at Assembly Hall just because they have a bunch of dudes who played a ton of college basketball. So that'll be a really fascinating game this week. But I'd also probably pick Indiana to cover just based on where it is and the emotions of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that building's going to be absolutely on fire. Pumped to watch this one. And, like, props, you know, I know some of the scheduling stuff is out of their hands, but, like, Indiana playing North Carolina, Arizona, and Kansas is pretty sweet in this non-conference. And yeah, for as bad as the schedule has been, it gets good. So
here's my question, though. So say they go, they beat UNC, win at Rutgers, beat Nebraska, 9-0, top 10, whatever, rock and rolling. I wouldn't be surprised to see them lose to Arizona and Vegas, lose at Kansas, go into the Big Ten, opening with a road game at Iowa. Like, where does this team end up in your mind? Like, is that enough to say, okay, they're the favorites in the Big Ten? Or is it more of, I don't know.
Well, you know, if you go and lose a toss-up game to Arizona and you, you know, lose a close-ish game in Lawrence, I'm saying that's, I have no problem with that. You know, that doesn't speak to anything large. Those losses are fine, but yeah, but beat Carolina at home.
Yep. That's,
you
know, a big
like
one.
Like you said, like, Carolina is not very good right now. Well, that's an overstatement, but you it's get what I mean.
It's really, I mean, not.
It's a good team. They're going to finish top three in the ACC. It'll be, you know, they're fine. Damn that. I mean, that Iowa State game was ugly though. So yeah, I mean, in terms of where they stand, I think if you go through and they're 10-2 and they've you know, played well against Kansas and Arizona, I think you could still consider them the favorite going into January games. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Like, projecting out, if you had to buy, say it was the same odds for Purdue, Illinois, Indiana, and you had to put a bet on one of them to win the league right now, be the best KenPom team. Forget about schedules, because Indiana actually does have a really hard schedule.
Yeah.
Who would you say in March, like, you would bet on
best KenPom team?
Like, in that stretch, yeah.
Yeah. And wait, what do we mean stretch?
Like, in conference play, the best.
Okay,
like,
I got you.
Ratings, team, regardless of wins based on.
I'm kind of inclined to say Illinois, just because of the offense-defense balance, where, like, Purdue could end up having a defense that's ranked 80th in the country. But we've seen it before, and I don't know if I'm buying Indiana being a 39% three-point shooting team. Like, the offense could slide off, whereas I do think Illinois could project out to be a top 20 team offense-defense.
I'll buy that. I think the worry is probably, like, I don't know that Illinois has a top 10 unit on either side of the ball. That would be my concern with that. Whereas I think someone like Purdue probably definitely has a top 10 offense.
They could be Indiana, a top 5 offense.
Yeah.
Very well.
So I don't know that Illinois has that elite side, but really the depth and talent's there. So I'll buy that. I it's a good question. And I think before the year, it was who else would you pick but Indiana? Now I feel like there's contenders emerging in the league.
I like that you complimented your own question. It's a nice play. I'm going to start doing that during interviews.
There you go.
All right. So Purdue, Illinois, Indiana are off the board. Here's where things, I think, start to get interesting because a lot of it is kind of perspective of what's been done so far. What do you like? What don't you like? It can be maybe a little bit of a numbers game. I'm between two.
I'm guessing they're two different ones than I have. Or,
I mean, knowing us, yeah, probably.
Not overlapping, put it that way.
This is why I should have ranked them before, Dylan.
You gotta make a pick.
Okay. I am going to go with Maryland.
Okay.
I think 12th in the country in offense right now. Again, we talked about Maryland pretty at length last week, but for the purposes here of conversation, instead of, you know, okay, I'll real quick rattle off what they've done so far just for anyone who's not paying attention, but four bye games that no one would particularly care about, and a couple nice neutral court wins over Miami and St. Louis. Dante Scott has been awesome. I think one of the more interesting things here, though, is Julian Reese. He's averaging 15-8, shooting 80% from the field. He went for like 7-8, or went 7 of 8 with 7 boards and 2 blocks against Miami. He's kind of one of those interesting like pivot point pieces for, you know, where you look at many teams and you can say, man, if the point guard can turn, can be this, it opens up all these doors. And if this guy does this for this team, it opens up all these doors. I feel a little bit like Julian Reese can be that for Maryland in terms of its Big Ten hopes, because they've got pieces, you know, Scott, Jameer Young, Hakeem Hart, like they've got guys. But you have to have a center in the Big Ten if you're going to compete. And Julian Reese is playing really well right now. And if he could be like, he doesn't need to be dominant, but if he's a top half of the Big Ten big man, I think they're in business in terms of, you know, winning 11, 12, 13 games, getting an NCAA bid, being, you know, being a success in Kevin Willard's first year.
Yeah. And so Maryland, if you look at the just Torvik numbers without preseason stuff, mm-hmm. Maryland's 6th in the country based on just what they've done this year. Now here's, that's the sell. Now here, or here's the downside. Beating St. Louis and Miami by 20 on neutrals is great, but most teams in the Big Ten are better than that, right? Like,
true.
Those teams are in the 40s in KenPom. Northwestern is 46 on KenPom. So you're basically talking about two blowout Thursday Big Ten tournament games if you really take a step back.
Yep.
We're going to learn in these next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it is, if this is actually legit. Illinois at Wisconsin, Tennessee on a neutral, and UCLA at home. Like, okay, those are real games. Those are the type of games that a team like Illinois played in Vegas. Those are the type of games that we can say, okay, this is an actual contender. What I will say is, though, Maryland looks like a team that should be good enough to make the NCAA tournament and be above 500. I just don't know that we've seen anything to say, okay, they're going to take a leap into that contender tier. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is the right place to rank them. But at the end of the day, there's still some incompletes just because they weren't going through the PK85 or the Atlanta, right. Like an elite MTE. It was just a really good.
Yeah, I think if they were at Atlantis or Maui or PK, they'd have a loss. Maybe two.
Or two.
Yeah. But just in terms of what they've done so far, what the eye test shows, blah, blah, blah. You know? Yeah.
The top five is really talented and really good.
This is probably the right spot for them right now. You know, I mean, it scares me. They're shooting 31% on threes. And yeah, when you go and play some of these other teams, you find out. But Illinois Friday that's something to tune in for. A win there. Like, I think you're going to start seeing a lot of chatter around Maryland.
Yeah, they have more difficult games after that.
Also, don't lose to Louisville.
Yeah, that's true. And also, I would say they probably win at home against Illinois, undefeated, whatever, everyone's celebrating, and then lose like 59-40 at Wisconsin.
At Wisconsin,
take the air out of that balloon pretty quick. That's kind of how that schedule sets up, if you ask me.
Yeah, and you could potentially go get smashed by Tennessee after that, and suddenly it's like, okay, well, we'll talk about Maryland again come February, maybe, you know, until then, who cares?
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So I would have picked Ohio State next.
That's the other one I was between. And I wanted to, because I want to talk about Ohio State. Okay.
So Ohio State went to Maui.
Yeah.
Lost a kind of a crazy high scoring shootout considering it was San Diego State. And then really blew out Cincinnati, who's not a good team. And then had a really good win against Texas Tech. And those third games against good teams, when you can get out with a 2-1 record at MT versus a 1-2 record, are huge. And that's going to be a great win for them that will age all year. Because you know Texas Tech is going to be this elite defensive team. They're going to win a bunch of Big 12 games. That's a huge win just for kind of the trajectory of this Ohio State season, right? If you lose that, then you go to Duke, then all of a sudden you're sliding uphill, you're trying to get back. Now they're ahead of the curve. I think their freshmen have been awesome. I think they're really good. I think they, like, I'm getting close to buying real stock in Ohio State.
So the only reason I picked Maryland is because Ohio State's defense really scares me. Like, San Diego State was doing whatever it wanted in that game. And like, defense was an issue this year. Like, Holtman has talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. And it's not, they're just not a good defensive team right now. So like, I just worry the long term how that plays out. But in terms of like the pieces, yeah, there's a lot to like here. The guy that I want to talk about is Bryce Sensabaugh, who I am now, I'll take all that stock. I love him. I think he's awesome. Spot up threes, step in threes, step over threes. He made a turnaround baseline jumper against Cincinnati that was just filthy. He can go off the bounce. He's got, like, he's thick, so he can dribble, use his body to create space. He's hitting 50% of his twos. I'm pretty much ready for him to probably replace Isaac Likely in the starting lineup, me personally. You know, like, Likely, and I also think Likely would be a nice piece off the bench because he's kind of a thick boy. He comes in and just starts randomly posting up other guards and stuff like that.
So here's the problem, though.
But Sensabaugh is the upside in terms of like what Ohio State could be.
You just said you don't want to buy into Ohio State because of its defense, and then you're saying take the one guy who plays defense off the court.
That's fair.
That's fair. Like, sort of the trade-off when you have a really talented freshman. And Sensabaugh's been awesome. Bruce Thornton's been awesome too. On-off numbers, he's been a crazy high impact for their offense. But that's the balance they have. Like, I will say, this team seems more athletic and has a little more defensive potential than maybe last year's team. Like, I don't know that Malachi Branham and like Justin Arons and that group was ever going to be great defensively. But still, it's figuring out how do you get...
Liddell was also a better defender than anyone on this team, though.
That is true. But Liddell also had to play... Like, they played him at the four a lot, which I don't know was... I don't know. Like, that never fit. Zed Key, though, it's going to be hard to build an elite defense around Zed Key, but he's been awesome offensively, too. So I think they can be not a great defense, but maybe marginally better than last year as it comes together. But yeah, giving up 88 points on 72 possessions to San Diego State. San Diego State's like a program that's allergic to scoring points. Like, this team, That's not what you want to see. And I get that they're maybe a little better offensively this year, but that's a scary number. But Maui rims are soft. We'll see how it comes together. Going on the road at Duke, tough spot, but Duke is also maybe a little overrated.
Duke's gettable.
So
and I feel like we've always kind of been hesitant on Justin Suing, but he's had a nice start. He put up 33 on Texas Tech. 11 of 14 twos in that game.
Yeah. He's been good. And I've been a Suing skeptic ever since he threw that behind the back pass to no one in particular against Michigan. I'm out on him. But he has been good. They have a lot of talent, a lot of depth. And I think this team, you can look at it and say they should clearly be better a month from now than they are now, just based on how many new pieces they're putting together and kind of figuring out.
I will say, when I watched the opener against Robert Morris and saw Zed Key step out and hit two threes, I thought that was going to be a thing. He's made one since, so maybe not. But it would be a nice piece.
Three more than he made last year, Brendan.
There you go. Anything else on Ohio State, Dylan?
No, you're up next.
Okay. I'm going to go with your boys at Iowa. Tough loss to TCU. Scoring, being held to 66 for Iowa is kind of a eye-opening number, and they barely got past Clemson, which was a little concerning as well. But, you know, the Seton Hall win is still sitting there, and they played great in that game on the road. Seton Hall is not very good, has since lost to Siena, I think I saw.
Yeah, lost to Siena and Oklahoma, but beat Memphis. So it's
– but the fact of the matter is, right, Iowa – at the end of the day, no matter what you can say, is they can have a top 10 offense nationally. So if I'm going to rank right now the sixth best team in the Big Ten, I'll take the team that has the potential for a top 10 offense. Keegan Murray is going to be a first team all Big Ten player. This just seems like the most reasonable pick here. Like a Michigan State has a better resume, but considering what's going on with the roster, you just can't reasonably put them here right now.
Yeah, I think we pretty much have an understanding of what this Iowa team's going to be. They sort of just flatlined in that TCU game, and it was the second game of back-to-back, but they had 41 points early in the second half and then just were stuck there for a long time. They scored like 10 points in 10 minutes and really just let the game get away.
I said Keegan, didn't I?
You might have.
Yeah, sorry, Chris.
Got to stick to it. And that's also a TCU team that desperately needed that game. Like, they had a really bad start to the year. So, tough spot. TCU is a good defensive team. So, I don't think you can say, like, oh, everything we think about Iowa is wrong because they lost to TCU. Like, that's that happens on a neutral. I think maybe if they win that game, though, we're talking about them in the top four or five in this. But either way, I think six is about right. I think
TCU could be a top half of the Big 12. They could finish in the top half of the best conference in college
baseball. Yeah, they were like trendy preseason pick. They have had some injuries, suspensions, and haven't really put it together. They did lose to Northwestern State, but I think Iowa generally is more likely to struggle against teams that play great defense and can't score, and that's exactly what TCU is. But that's also kind of Seton Hall, and they got that done. So I'm good with Iowa here. I think it's like a top 25 team. I think we know they're going to be awesome offensively. Chris Murray clearly can be that number one guy for them, and the pieces around will all improve as we go. So I think that's right.
Back-to-back ACC games for Iowa. Iowa, they play Georgia and Duke back-to-back.
Duke is in MSG. Yeah, that'll be a good one. And then they have
one December Big Ten games.
Yep. All right. I think Iowa, good start to the year. I'll go next. And I really want to take Penn State, but I'm still going Michigan State. I think the win over Kentucky is as good of a win as there is Mm-hmm. And the league at this point got just enough done in Portland to make it a salvageable week. I think the big concern for me with Michigan State is that the defense has sort of gone off the rails the last four games. 1.12 points per possession allowed to Villanova and Alabama, 1.09 to Oregon, and 1.22 to Portland. Those are bad numbers defensively, giving up a lot of threes. Some of the rim protection that we saw early hasn't quite been there. That's my worry with this group. And then obviously you have the injuries. I think you can make a case Malik Hall probably holds a lot of that defense together. So him being out is key.
And Aikens is a pretty darn good perimeter defender. So yeah, the way I look at Michigan State right now is just like, put a pin in it. Let's return in like mid-January when hopefully these guys are healthy and they're back and they have their kind of full allotment. Getting Notre Dame on the road is like a winnable game.
Notre Dame,
but also a losable game. It's a losable game. If you beat Portland by one, you can go and lose in South Bend. Okay.
That's fair. Tough spot too, coming back from Portland.
Yeah. I mean, it's a brutal spot going on the road after that trip, and they have to be pretty exhausted, I would think. And they're super shorthanded, and you got Joey Hauser playing on half a foot, you know, like what is reasonable to expect? If they can go and steal a win here and actually get through, it's December. Like if they get through Northwestern and Penn State, that would be wildly impressive. Like Penn State is certainly a losable game that's going to be on the road. Penn State is going to be looking at that like wide-eyed in terms of their hopes for the early season and to Penn prove State's that they good. Are legit. Penn State is good. And they're shooting the shit out of the ball too. And Michigan State is showing that it's kind of a porous defense right now. So yeah. Can we talk about AJ Hogard?
What do you got to say about AJ?
My man just he's got to find his happy place right now because he's still prone to just doing some things that are just head scratching. He's a junior right now on a team that is shorthanded and needs like steady presence, steady play. We do not need to be forcing some of the passes he forces and just stop shooting the ball. I'm sorry. He's 5 for 15 on 2-point jumpers. He's 5 for 18 on threes. It's
so counterpoint. The best things AJ does are when he does shit that you might say is head scratching, but he makes plays, right? Like great passes are what he does.
I think that the handful of times it works in our minds outweighs the number of times that it doesn't work.
Oh, well, whereas if he just made the simple play. But I think part of the issue is this team also needs someone to make plays at times, and he's quick to volunteer to be that guy, and he will try to make things happen maybe a bit too much. I don't know. I it's a tricky role because I don't really know. He's not like he's kind of the off guard, but like he's great when he can push the ball in transition and make things happen in transition. I think when you have to always be looking to push in transition, you're going to be prone to make some questionable decisions and you have to live with those.
The problem is in the half court.
What's he supposed to do if you can't shoot jump shots? It's easy to look like you're forcing everything and making bad decisions when you can't make a shot. And that's been that you just listed off those stats. That's the problem, right?
That's when you just make a pass, just pass the ball. The amount of like step in long two jumpers with like 15 seconds left on the shot clock where you're like, what the hell is that? Like that's what I mean where it's like you're a junior. That junior shot, I don't care. If it's there, that's fine.
There's not just the easy pass if teams are giving that up, though. That's sort of the whole thing. If you're defending Michigan State, you're going to say, all right, don't close out on AJ.
Obviously.
And then there's not an easy pass that creates an opportunity. So it's a very fine line between why are you shooting so much? And if you don't shoot, we can't run offense. So
I don't know. I mean, I just think his decision-making's been bad.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I think it's a hard, hard spot, though. It be a lot easier if that jumper was falling. A couple other Michigan State things. Pierre Brooks been shooting the shit out of the ball. Really, that's a really good development for Michigan State. He's 14 to 34 from three. Probably they don't win some of these games without that. Hauser's been shooting it great. And Tyson Walker has been awesome. Had some big scoring games. Really confident with that pull-up jumper. Again, I think you like everything he's doing. The only thing is, like, you're giving some of his usage to AJ, who's been a lot less efficient. So that's the thing they have to figure out in the backcourt, as far as how that all clicks together. But we talked about the depth all offseason, and we had walk-ons playing in Portland there. So that is definitely a valid concern at this point, I guess, because it doesn't seem like it's going to get better anytime soon.
I did. There were a couple moments in the Alabama and Oregon games where Jackson Collar showed a little bit of what is there. He just put together a couple offensive moves where you're like, okay, you're starting to kind of see what is there. I mean, he's a way away from being, I think, what some people were hoping that he would be as a freshman. But I think, like, we hadn't even seen anything early on. So, like, there were at least a couple kind of flash moments where you started to see it from him. There is like a theory that you can come up with that, like, right now what's going on with the rotation and the roster will actually have benefits in January, February, March. Like the fact that these guys are being forced into larger roles, forced to play some more, like a Trey Holloman is getting time that he otherwise probably wouldn't get. Pierre Brooks is getting shot attempts that he probably wouldn't get. I mean, there's so few bodies that, like, you do want some of these guys to at least get some run. Whereas if Malik Hall were playing, you know, 36 minutes and Aikens were playing 32 minutes, I don't know. I'm trying to spit shine some of this a little bit.
I buy that take in the simple fact that having eight guys was good. Because people got in their roles and you could really establish roles, and it wasn't sort of this line change. We're going to play this guy today, this guy tomorrow. But there's plenty of minutes for Pierre Brooks with Malik Hall in the rotation. True. So I don't know that it's necessarily a good thing that the injuries have come. But I think credit to Michigan State for getting out of there with those two wins, because
big time.
Tough spot. And that'll sort of just paper over that week. It's not going to be a negative by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm good with that. Michigan State at 7.
And there's still no bad loss. Like, there's no bad loss. Like, they really haven't done anything.
You can't have a bad loss when you only play good games.
Right. But, a loss to Oregon would age poorly because Oregon sucks.
A loss to Portland would have been bad.
Yeah, like, Portland's not going to win the WCC. They're going to finish third in the WCC. And they're a good team, you know, like, they've done some nice things, but.
Yep, I think that's right.
All right.
Next up, I'm going with Penn State at 6-1.
Wait a second.
What?
You just took mine.
Didn't you take Michigan State? No, you took Michigan State. All right, who you got?
I had Penn State.
Right. Sorry. It was just too. I was too excited to talk about the Fighting
Micahs.
Jalen Pickett, best guard in the Big Ten.
Currently, first team All Big Ten selection. Penn State wins over Butler, Furman, and Colorado State at a two point. Or no, I'm sorry, they lost to Colorado State. I misread.
No, they beat Colorado State.
They did beat Colorado State.
They lost to Virginia Tech.
Thank you. Shooting 42% on threes, ranked 10th nationally in effective field goal percentage, ranked 21st in turnover percentage. They've got a top 50 defense. There's a lot going on with Penn State where, you know, it's time to maybe start believing in this thing. You know, a nice win over Clemson on the road, I think, would be kind of positive momentum in terms of that, like, buy-in. But you know, I think we're seeing what Micah Shrewsbury envisioned. You know, this is a highly efficient offense. And, I mean, they just have so many guys shooting over 40% on threes. Miles Dredd, 52% on 38 attempts. Seth Lundy, 48% on 31 attempts. Andrew Funk, 39% on 52 attempts. Are you loving Andrew Funk? My man's taking 8 threes a game.
Got to get shots up.
Go get it. Cameron Winter, 45% on 20 attempts. And Jalen Pickett, 40% on 25 attempts.
So,
is that sustainable? Who knows? But it's awesome right now.
Yeah, right now they're top 10 in three-point volume and top 10 in three-point accuracy. So that's pretty good. And the is it sustainable? I don't know. I mean, I think those numbers will regress. They're not going to shoot 42% from three all year. That's like Villanova style. But Jalen Pickett has been categorically awesome. He's one of the best pick and roll guards in the country. Fourth in the country in points per game created out of ball screens. Really only one or two guys in the top 20 is as efficient as him. They're scoring 1.2 points per play when he shoots or passes out of a pick and roll. So just ridiculous ball screen numbers. He really runs the entire offense. He's breaking down the defense, seeing the floor, spreading the ball over the place, and scoring when he needs to, right? Like, he's shooting 54% on twos, despite the fact that most of those are shots he creates himself. Third in the country, fifth in the country in assist rate. Like, he's been ridiculous. I think it's going to be a really hard offense for teams to guard in the Big Ten, despite the fact that they're shooting it really well. Like, it's hard to guard spread pick and roll with shooters around the floor and a great point guard, and that's exactly what Pickett is. I think he really, like, Pickett was the highest usage. Like, he used more ball screens last year than anyone else and sort of figured it out as he went. This year, he looks like he's really mastered what they want him to do and is in complete control. And that, I wouldn't want to play them anytime soon because they are really tough scout, really tough to guard, right? Like, I think it's hard to, I think they have concerns, right? Can they defend the paint? Can they rebound? Like, those are all fair things to talk about. But offensively, they're going to be really fun. And I'm curious where that goes from here.
Yeah, I mean, they really haven't played anybody with, like, the caliber of centers that Penn State is going to see in the league. Their best center they faced is probably Manny Bates at Butler. Mm-hmm. And he went for 16 and 10 and made 8 of 12 shots. So I'll be curious to see, like, how Penn State defends true kind of back to the basket bigs. Do they swarm the ball in doubles? Do they just dig a lot? Like, are you going to see kind of like what Arizona State did to Michigan, where they just had kind of a bunch of guys just harassing Hunter Dickinson into turnovers and things like that, right? Like, because they do have guards who can dig and swarm and crowd passing lanes and do all kinds of stuff. But point being, like, we haven't seen Penn State play the kind of basketball it's going to need to play in conference.
Yeah, they've played two high major teams, beat Butler at home, lost to Virginia Tech. Like, this week, if you can go and beat Clemson and then beat Michigan State at home, like, okay, now you're for real. Otherwise, maybe you just have this really cute offense and can scrap to maybe 500 in the league and sneak in the NCAA tournament. Like, I think these are the kind of games that will tell us if this stacks up, right? Because the reality is, a lot of those games in, I don't know where they were, but that tournament, which was in Charleston or South Carolina somewhere, those games are good games, but, like, you probably should beat Colorado State and Furman on neutral floors.
Yeah, I agree. But there's a lot to like there, for sure.
I'm excited. Jalen Pickett is really fun to watch. Like, honestly, when Penn State's playing well, he's as exciting of a player to watch in the league just because of how much he controls the game and kind of gets everyone involved.
Okay.
All right. We are at number 9. Is it my pick to confirm?
It is actually your turn. Yes.
All right. I'm going with the Wisconsin Badgers.
Okay.
Wisconsin has been, I think, pretty good. They got a good win over Stanford. They beat Dayton in a truly disgusting 43-42 game in 63 possessions, went to overtime with Kansas and beat USC. I think they play Wisconsin defense. They're about 12th in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency. We know what that's going to be on any given night. The offense, it hasn't quite been there yet, but I think that playing no offense and elite defense is enough to get Wisconsin to 500 in the league and win games at the Kohl Center. And the fact is, like, Tyler Wall, Chucky Hepburn, Stephen Carl, these guys are going to keep improving a bit and getting a little more comfortable offensively. But that's kind of where I'm at. Like, great defense. I haven't seen anything to really think the offense is going to be elite, but we'll see.
I mean, I love Tyler. Well, here's the thing about Kansas is Wisconsin took Kansas to overtime. Okay. That game swings one possession the other way, and suddenly Wisconsin has a win over Kansas mm-hmm. on their resume. It's probably two or three spots higher in this, right? And that's the difference of one possession. So this is probably low for Wisconsin based on the fact that taking Kansas to overtime is more impressive than anything with Penn State has done. Probably more impressive than anything Iowa's done. Right. So, you know, we're probably low on them. Tyler Wall was awesome. Like, Tyler Wall looked like a big time player in that Kansas game. He looked like a guy who's kind of ready to step into the role of being, you know, the top option for Wisconsin and the freshman guard whose name I'm blanking on right now. Connor Essegian? Perfect. But he looks every bit the part right now. He was great in all those. He scored double figures in all three games in Maui. He put 13 on Dayton. He put 12
on Atlantis.
I'm sorry. I've mixed him up with Ohio State. Put 12 on USC. You know, and that, like, Wisconsin needs shooting, and if he can add that off the bench, that's terrific.
So
yeah, Wisconsin looks like Wisconsin.
Wisconsin is ranked 351st in 2-point shooting. Sixth in opponent 3-point shooting. So basically no one has been able to make a shot against them. That's a stat that everyone usually points to as something that will regress over time. And Wisconsin is basically unable to create quality looks inside the arc, a stat that usually is a lot more steady is your offensive 2-point shooting. So that's my concern with this team, is they're shooting 39% on twos. Like, that's really bad. And last year's team, to be fair, wasn't a good 2-point shooting team either, but they had Johnny Davis. So at least they had someone who made a bunch of those twos. So that's my concern with this team, because to me, those numbers scream stay away right now. But at the same time, it's Wisconsin. They figure out a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, when I said the long-term concern on Ohio State earlier is defense, like, you can say the same about Wisconsin. The long-term concern is just, like, how good can this offense reasonably be? It's currently, 115th? When you just look at, like, great guards produced basically a top 60 offense each of the last 4 years and had some pretty good Wisconsin teams, like, could this team be outside the top 100 in offense at year's end?
Wisconsin's offense without preseason priors on Torvik, 254th.
Yeah.
So maybe it
really
could.
Bad.
Maybe
it really could. Bad.
Also, the 12th best free throw shooting defense. Teams are only shooting 59% of free throws against Wisconsin. So I'm staying away on this right now. I'm staying away. To be fair, though, like, Marquette, whatever, like, they have some weird games coming up, but I'm just wait and see a little bit here, because those numbers all scream stayaways to me. Yes. What do you got next?
That would be very much the, like, if they had beaten Kansas, it would be the big time. Everyone would go all in on buying Wisconsin earlier, and the numbers would tell you that that's a fool's errand.
That's called the entire 2022 season. We just saw it. And we saw it end with a loss to Iowa State. But anyways.
Okay. I'm up. I'm going. What is left here? Lordy. I'm going to go with Rutgers. They still have that loss to Temple on the resume, but that game was played with injuries. None of their wins are really going to move the needle. They still don't have a top 100 KenPom win. But they go to Miami this week and then get Indiana and Ohio State in those December games, followed by a home game against Seton Hall, followed by a home game against Wake Forest. So we'll learn some stuff about Rutgers, but there's some interesting things to talk about here. We probably don't really know anything about them now, and that's fine, but Caleb McConnell just returned from a left knee injury over the weekend in a win over Central Connecticut State. He came off the bench, had a brace on that knee. Paul Mulcahy is still out with a left shoulder injury. He's been cleared to practice, but not for contact play. I think that's right. I think that's the latest, at least. But Cam Spencer?
Shooting that shit. And he
shooting the shit.
And he's like ridiculously good at getting steals. He's 11th in the country in steal rate. He's just a monster with stealing the ball.
Consistent scoring, though, from a guy that nobody was talking about in the preseason. He's a transfer from Loyola, Maryland.
He's good.
17 points, 18 points, 15, 17, 19, 18. Shooting a ton of threes. The bad news is that through six games, he's the only player on the roster with more than six made threes.
Well,
which is pretty hard to do.
Especially when you consider the level of competition. But yeah, they haven't played a game with both of their starting guards. Absolutely. Right? So Mulcahy played the first three games. McConnell came back last game. What does this team look like with both of them? I think time will tell. The defense has been unquestionably elite through the early season. They're 11th in KenPom. So they're like every bit as good defensively as we thought. That it's interesting because Rutgers in previous years didn't really force many turnovers and still was really good defensively. This year they ranked 9th in the country in turnover rate. I think that's almost entirely because of Cam Spencer. But imagine how many turnovers they can force if you have Cam Spencer's steals and you have Caleb McConnell's defense.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like, holy shit, like, that's going to be a miserable team to play against. And I do think they will test people once they're healthy. I don't know what's there on offense. Cliff has been really good and carried them, but he's also struggling at the line. He's 50%. His two-point numbers are down a little bit. He seems to think that he can shoot, which is not really a thing that I think he should think.
In those games without those two playing.
Yeah, and he's getting it done. He's carrying the team. Right. His usage is way up. He was at 19% usage last year. He's up to 28%. So he's good enough to carry their offense through these games. They're going to need some kind of perimeter offense at some point.
I like that Derek Simpson, the freshman point guard who stepped in for Mulcahy, he scored like 16 or 17 in the win over UMass Lowell when Mulcahy went out, and then he slipped into the starting lineup in the last three games since. And he's good.
He's also shooting 33% on twos, but yeah.
He was like a, you know, three-star recruit who's at least held his own. He's got some good size. He's like 6'3". But he's just a guy that, like, you just watch him and you're like, okay, I like that guy. What is Rutgers? Who knows?
So find out. What you said about Michigan State, though, I actually do think this Rutgers roster could benefit from playing without Mulcahy and McConnell for these games. Fair. For someone like a Simpson who will probably step into a smaller role, but is getting a good test. I think the real key, though, is can Mulcahy and McConnell be fully healthy, and what does that look like? Like, that's what we just don't know right now, because cleared but no contact. It's a shoulder injury for him, right?
Yes.
And those can tend to kind of, I feel like they can linger. So that's what we need to figure out, because they need those two guys to be like their second and third best player if they're going to be really good. And if they are, though, I like Cam Spencer. I think there's pieces there. I wouldn't want to play them right now.
Right. Okay. You're up. I have a guess who this is going to be.
Number 11. This is where it gets dicey here. I'm going with Northwestern.
Wow.
Over Michigan. Northwestern is higher in like Horvick's preseason unadjusted numbers. Northwestern played pretty well in their tournament. They beat Liberty, who's a good team. Took Auburn to the last possession. I think their defense has been really good. their offense has been absolutely terrible. Like everything we said about Wisconsin just make it worse. They're 309th in offense with Torvik's unadjusted numbers, but I don't know. I don't see any reason to pick Michigan ahead of them right now, and that's the fact of it.
Yeah. Wow. I was a little caught off guard though.
Keeping you on your toes.
How about that? Yeah, no, win over Auburn, even if it was just an absolute trash heap of a game, would have
it would have been a good one. They already won at Georgetown, who's awful. They're gonna be lucky enough to play.
But the thing about that is that they didn't lose to Georgetown.
And it was on the road.
You know? And they'll beat Pitt at home. They only have one December game, so they're the opposite of Iowa, right? Where them and Iowa are the two teams that don't have December, or only have, I'm sorry, only have one Big Ten and Michigan?
Mm-hmm. There's a few.
Michigan only has
one? Yeah, because they're going to London. So they only play Minnesota.
Right. But, you know, Northwestern is a, you look at the rest of their schedule, this is a schedule made for a coach who needs to not lose games. Because after the game against Michigan State on the road in Big Ten play, they play Prairie View A&M, DePaul, Illinois, Chicago, and Brown before returning to Big Ten play. So they will have played potentially by season's end. I will say they probably have one non-conference game against a top 100 KenPom team, because I imagine DePaul's going to slide.
You're not in on Liberty?
No, once they get into league play, they'll slide, won't
they? That's a good team. But yeah, I agree. Their schedule is about making the final win total look a little rosier. I don't love this team, but I just think that's probably the right place to put them right now. I think they're better. Like the reality is, I think we thought they could be more like a Nebraska or Minnesota, but they seem more competent than both of those teams at this point in the year, I would say.
Right.
Like they're not in, but also we've said that about Northwestern before, and then they just go and lose like 15 games in a row. So time will tell.
Last year, Northwestern was spreading it out. You know?
Was that two years ago?
I don't know.
I think that was 2 years ago during the COVID year when they started 6-1 and then went on a, I think, 13-game losing streak.
All right. Next up, my pick at number 12 is Michigan. So 5-1. So just in terms of the just looking at the record, it's not as dire as this placement in the power ranking draft, whatever the hell we call this thing. But they just have not looked good. It's some of the stuff that like Michigan has done is just like, you can't unsee it. You can't unsee how bad they were against Arizona State. You can't unsee how bad they were being taken overtime at home against Ohio. They were bad against Jackson State, which is a sub-300 team and will probably finish as a sub-300 team. EMU took them to the brink. So they basically had, you know, this performance against Pitt where everything went right. And then they've had a lot of games where everything did not go right. There's concerns on both sides of the ball too, is the other thing. Like there's a lot of teams that we talk about in terms of like those top half of the league teams where you can say, oh, well, there's the defense, but there's questions on offense or vice versa, right? And Michigan, I think both sides, you have more questions than answers right now.
Yeah, it's one thing if you play poorly against the SWAC team or you play a close game with Eastern Michigan, but the reality is Michigan is playing poorly most times it plays. And mm-hmm. It's not like we've seen them play three great games in a row and really seen like, okay, this is what Michigan looks like on a good day. This is just a bad day. Michigan looks like a team that's trying to figure out how to have good days. And even that game against Pitt, they didn't start great. And Pitt is not a good team by any stretch of the imagination. So I think the question, there's a lot of questions here. And I think the most troubling part about it, like Michigan looks like they don't know how to play together, how to play like what they're supposed to do. And that's especially troubling because they had that preseason tour. They had the extra practices, and they still look pretty far from that. So how are you going to find that at home against Virginia and in London against Kentucky? Like that's tough. I guess you just hope Kentucky has some bad fish and chips or something like that. But I don't know. Like, you need to get something. The guards are struggling to make shots, and it's kind of permeating through the rest of their game. I think the lack of any confidence in both Kobe Bufkin and Jalen Llewellyn is pretty telling. Jet Howard has been unquestionably awesome on offense, but he's also easily Michigan's worst defensive player. And that's kind of a conundrum when you need his offense, but at the same time, like, he plays high school defense in real college basketball games, and it's really hard to win. And that's not going to, people are just going to realize that more and more, right? Like, it's one thing to do that in the first week of the season when there's no film or anything like that.
People
are going to be like, okay, well, now we know how to score against this team. And until you can figure that out, it's going to be a struggle. So I think that's the big concerns. I think defensive rebounding is a huge concern for this team.
They get nothing in the offensive glass either.
Well, that's fine.
Last year they at least were.
Well, yeah, they have Moussa Diabate.
Got something. Like, I'm just, go ahead. I'll let you finish your point.
I just think that Michigan hasn't played a good offensive rebounding team, and it hasn't been good on the defensive glass, and that's probably a big concern, especially for this weekend against Kentucky. But like, Terrence Williams has not been, the downgrade from Diabate to Terrence Williams on the defensive glass is significant. And obviously he gives you some different things offensively, but that's a risk that hasn't even really cost Michigan yet. And I think is pretty clearly a weak spot.
And who are they about to play?
They play Virginia this week, and then they play Kentucky. That's not how you want to figure it out. At the same time,
Old Oscar is going to go out there and try to get 15 offensive rebounds in that game. Like, not even exaggerating.
Yeah, at the same time, like, the good part about Kentucky is they're also having some of these, like, issues of how everything fits together. And I think the Virginia game, like, at a certain point, what this team needs, this Michigan team needs, is just to like see a couple shots go down early and just find a little bit of confidence, because they've been playing so tight in those Ohio and Jackson State games. Like, the uncertainty, the sort of tentativeness, it's kind of contagious. Right. And the only way to really fix that is to go on a 20-0 run in a game that matters. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're back. We know how to play. And you can't, it doesn't matter how much you do in practice or anything else. Like, it just has to click in a game.
And, well, here's the difference over on like Kentucky trying to figure it out right now versus Michigan trying to figure out right now. It's like Michigan has not only looked bad, they've looked bad against average to bad competition. Okay. Kentucky, went to double overtime versus Michigan State and got hammered by Gonzaga in a game in Seattle. These are huge marquee games against good teams. The other games that Kentucky's played, beat Bellarmine by 40, or I'm sorry, beat North Florida by 40, beat South Carolina State by 40, Duquesne by 25, Howard by 30. They haven't had what Michigan has had, where, you know,
they're clearly much better. I'm just saying, like, they have issues to figure out. It's not like you're playing Kansas or some team that is just really, really good and talented. Kentucky is talented enough to beat a lot of these bye games with their eyes closed. Michigan isn't that. I think playing poorly in bad games tells you that Michigan is not playing well right now. And I think that's unquestionable. It doesn't affect maybe your resume or anything yet, right? Like, Michigan doesn't have the sort of bad loss that you could say like the Minnesota home game was last year on its resume.
Yeah.
But it has to figure out how to beat anyone decent. It doesn't look like a team good enough to care about a resume right now or playing well enough.
All right. Yeah. And like, Michigan's hard to watch too, because it is like everything is just coming difficult. Unless it is like the defense has issues. And then on the offensive side of the ball, like, unless it is Hunter Dickinson just putting the ball in the basket or Jet Howard shooting / chucking a three, you're like, where are the buckets coming from? Where are they? Like, how can they just run a simple offense and just get a good look and make a shot? Like, there are times that, like, that just seems like something that's a little out of reach right now. And, you know,
it hasn't been getting good looks. It's like the last two games, Kobe and Jalen have just been basically unguarded, and it's been making good. Like, they're just getting wide open threes.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and watching a team miss wide open threes is definitely hard to watch. It's probably at the top of the list.
Especially when, like, you don't turn the ball over either.
Yeah, and that's what they do.
That's what I mean. Like, they just can't score the ball, which is not good.
Yeah.
And now they have to play Virginia.
Eventually, like, what's happening is you're not going to be able to get 20 and 10 from Hunter Dickinson every night if teams don't have to guard your two starting guards. So eventually they're going to have to make shots. You're going to have to do something else. You're going to have to figure something out, because that makes it really easy to just sag into the paint. Like, if you look at those Jackson State and Ohio games, they had 3-4 guys in the paint. Whenever Dickinson touched the ball, he's kicking it out. There's only one guy that really is confident to take and make a three, and that's Jet Howard. Honestly, you could say he doesn't shoot enough. He's only at 20% usage and he's shooting 44% from three. They need him to shoot twice as often, you can almost say, based on how this team is setting up. But
based on the numbers, yeah.
If Kobe Bufkin and Jalen Llewellyn shoot 15% from three-point range all year, then obviously that's not really going to work. At the same time, it's not like there's obvious guys to play over them off the bench. So that's the reality.
Do they need to be getting, like, Joey Baker more looks? Just spot-up looks?
And they had, like the Ohio game, he did nothing. And that is, I think the big thing they need to do is play, like, whenever Joey Baker's on the floor, Hunter Dickinson needs to be on the floor. It's by far, it'll make both of them better.
Yes.
And right now it's ending up with Joey Baker playing a lot of minutes with mostly backups. And I don't think that suits him. I don't think that suits Hunter Dickinson. So I would think that there'd be a way to get them overlap more. Like, you could make a case, do you just start him? Because, okay, now you have that extra bit of shooting out there and you can do something different. The problem, though, is, like, you're starting Jet Howard and Joey Baker. You're already a terrible defensive team. That's a little terrifying to even ponder. So that's the trade-off. But either way, I think more shots for Joey Baker, obviously a good thing. He's 47% from three on the year. But the reality is Kobe Bufkin and Jalen Llewellyn are going to play a lot of minutes. They have to make some shots.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder if this is like a light switch situation for Llewellyn. I mean, this is a guy who's played a lot. He was a first-team All-Ivy League player. Like,
he looks like he has no idea what to do coming off a ball screen.
Yeah, it's not good. Do you think there's a chance, though, that it is a dramatic turn at some point?
So it's hard to look at it and say, oh, yeah, I see the signs of that. But the one thing I did do, and I have the numbers somewhere, but I pulled Devontae Jones's, like, KenPom splits through the first six games of last year. And it was, like, very – like, Jalen Wallen's at 89 offensive rating. Devontae Jones was at, like, 93. He has turning it over on, like, 30% of possessions. He finished the year at, like, 112. So –
right.
He basically did flip a switch, and it came probably around Christmas break where he kind of, like, retooled and figured it out. He was really bad in that Minnesota game, and that was sort of rock bottom. Then he got benched against San Diego State for Frankie Collins, and then they sort of built him back up, and all of a sudden he was Michigan's second best player at that year. So we haven't, like, I can't tell you, like, oh, look, he's clearly close to figuring it out. He looks bad. He looks unsure of himself. His jumper looks bad. But we've also seen point guards make a substantial leap from bad to pretty good within the course of a season. Yeah. So hard to say.
Yeah, it's because I know we were both high on Llewellyn coming into the year. And one of the things that, you know, I thought a lot about in terms of him being potentially one of the better guards in the conference was the fact that he's going to be in this two-man game with Dickinson. So by him playing with one of the best centers in the country, that's going to elevate Llewellyn into being one of the best guards in the conference. Whereas after six games, you have to start wondering if Llewellyn not being good is something that ends up dragging down Dickinson, which is certainly plausible. You already just laid it out.
Yeah. I will add, I think Kobe Bufkin looks better than I expected in like every area other than making wide open shots. So that to me gives more reason to like, I think there's something there with him, whereas Llewellyn, it's harder to see. So that's the one thing I'd add. But if those two guys can't make shots, it's not great.
In terms of like the long term, you know, you have to wonder a little bit about, and this is probably too much Michigan talk here, but like, okay, if you get kicked here by Virginia and Kentucky back to back, you play Carolina down there. Like, is that reasonably, is there a win there? I don't know. Probably not. They won't be favored in that game, obviously. But if they're coming out of non-conference play with four losses and nothing close to a good win, and then you go 10-10 in the league.
So here's the thing. You're going to have, I get that it's non-conference versus conference. If Michigan goes 10-10, they're going to have a really, I would say, compelling tournament record just based on their, like, the number of quality wins. Like, every win is basically going to be a Q1 win in this league. So I think I get the non-conference thing. I think you look at, like, if you lose two games this week, you have to go to Minnesota and win. That would just be a huge hole to fall into. It's a team that beat you your butt a year ago in Chrysler at the same point in the season. So it's definitely a concern. You would say the Virginia game on Tuesday night has got to be a win, right? Like, that's the home game. That's the one you're supposed to win. Be interesting to see how it goes, though, because, like, Virginia is not this, like, uber-talented team who's going to run you off the floor, but they're also a team that's very well coached and is going to beat you when you make freshman mistakes all over the court and when you don't execute your plays on offense or defense. So tough spot. I wouldn't say that, like, oh, they can't make the tournament if they lose these non-conference games, just because of how many, like, obviously it's going to be uphill. You're going to have to beat teams like Purdue and Indiana at home, but those are going to be the non-conference games don't count for more than conference games.
Okay.
Let's knock out
this. We got two left here. You're on number 13.
Is it my pick?
It's your pick.
All right, I will go with Nebraska. Haven't lost a bye game. Progress. Beat Florida State by 17. Like, what is wrong at Florida State? They have talent on that roster.
Holy shit.
But they've also, they lost to Memphis, lost to Oklahoma, and lost to St. John's. I think they're competitive, but they're still a bottom two team for me.
Well, yes, that's fair to say. I mean, getting Derek Walker back certainly helps. He didn't play, 5 of those early season games, 2 of which were losses. But jumped right back in. He put 15 on Memphis. Yeah, he put 20 against Florida State. So there's like at least like, hey, there's something good coming, right? And this is a guy, he's in his 5th year of playing college basketball, started at Tennessee, if you don't remember. But like, okay, they have a chance to keep improving. Kind of like Minnesota a little bit, which will obviously finish 14th here. But like Minnesota getting, not starting the year with Jameson Battle and then kind of playing through him, working his way back has been, let's say, difficult, right? Because he is, 5 of 13 on twos and 4 of 19 on threes after a year where, you know, he basically carried them in wins by making a bunch of tough shots, and that's how they played. This year, you envisioned that version of Jameson Battle paired with Dawson Garcia and some young pieces around them, and that's basically what Minnesota was going to roll out and hope to, you know, steal games and keep progressing. But Minnesota so far, losses to DePaul and UNLV. Also no bye losses.
They got punked by UNLV. Because I was covering the Michigan game that night and had nothing better to do with Wednesday before Thanksgiving at like 1 in the morning, I was watching that game. It was not even like the finals margin is not, it was not even close. Like UNLV.
UNLV isn't terrible.
They're good, but they just out-physicaled them, out-toughed them, just basically wiped the floor with them. So that was not, that's not giving me the warm and fuzzies about UNLV, or about Minnesota, sorry. But either way, like, I don't know. Like, where's this going? They go to Virginia Tech and Purdue this week. Like, seems like it's going up with that on the schedule.
Okay. That's that. Real quick, we're going to roll through ACC Big Ten. Both give our picks for each game.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire. We will say winner gets a round of drinks next time we're in the same city. All right?
All right.
Bar tab. Not a round. Bar tab.
Ooh.
I'm going to put you up. I'm going to put you in debt. All right. We'll go by order of basically importance or watchability. First off, Ohio State at Duke.
Duke.
Ohio State.
Okay. I can see it.
I feel like the grand tradition of the early coach replacing the legend, catching a series of early L's and everyone losing their mind. Big vibes here for that. Duke's already lost to Kansas and Purdue, obviously.
I mean, Ryan Young
didn't lose to Purdue. Duke. Didn't lose to Purdue. Got stomped by Purdue. Is Duke right now is basically relying on the offensive glass. So if Ohio State can kind of keep it there and then go hit some shots, my boy Bryce Sansabaugh coming out party on the national stage, all in.
Okay.
Let me keep track here so we can.
All right, we got to go quick here.
Okay, sorry, Jesus. Okay, North Carolina at Indiana.
UNC. I'm switching it up, even though I said earlier on the pod that Indiana should cover. I just feel a UNC bounce back spot here.
You take UNC?
Yeah.
Okay. I took OSU in the first game. I'm going to take Indiana here. Big game for Trace Jackson Davis in this game. Is he going to bring it?
He did seem to reach another level in that Xavier game when it was big spot. So
he's going to bring it in this game. I think Indiana is possibly without Armando Bacot. I think there's he's got something going on.
Bacot plays for UNC. What do you mean?
That's what we're talking about. Oh, Indiana UNC.
You said Indiana's without him.
No, you know what I mean.
He's not playing.
Well, he had an ankle thing in that last game.
All right, I'm taking Indiana. Switch my Indiana.
Bullshit.
He felt sharp pains in his right ankle. I'm taking Indiana. I didn't know Bacot was hurt.
Okay. We'll see. When he suits up that day, you're going to be scrambling.
All right. Let's keep it moving here.
Michigan State at Notre Dame. I don't know if Aikens is back. I'd be surprised Malik Hall will not be back.
Michigan State. Notre Dame is not a great basketball team.
Not.
What do you?
I don't like the travel. I don't like the matchup. I'm going to take Notre Dame. All right. Let's just knock out Virginia at Michigan.
I'll go Virginia.
I'm also going Virginia. All right, Wake Forest at Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. So this Big Ten ACC challenge is not exactly singing to me with quality games here.
No, I mean, well, the Big Ten is favored on KenPom at least, is favored in 10 of the 14 games. You know, those Wisconsin numbers are now have me a little worried. If this is a fraudtastic team. I think I picked Wisconsin 10th in the preseason.
Wisconsin fought the fraud all of last year, though. They were a fraudulent team and still won the league. So they can get their mileage worth.
Wake Forest has done nothing. Lost to Loyola Marymount in overtime. I'll go Wisconsin. Okay. Next up, we got, let's go Penn State at Clemson.
Clemson.
Interesting one. Ooh. You're turning your back on your guys.
Worried.
I'm going to say Penn State. I like their guard play. Rutgers at Miami.
I'm going to go Rutgers. Miami looks a little dysfunctional to me.
A little dysfunctional. I feel like this is kind of an ask of Rutgers winning this game. I'm going to say Miami. Okay. Syracuse at Illinois.
Illinois, easy.
Illinois, easy.
Double-digit win.
Terrence Shannon going to make 12 threes this time against his own?
We'll go RJ Melendez, drops 25.
Ooh. I tell you what I do like is Coleman Hawkins passing through that zone.
Yeah, and Syracuse just lost to Bryant. There, come on.
Lost to Colgate, too, for the second year in a row. Maryland at Louisville.
Maryland, don't be the team that loses to Louisville.
Don't do it.
That's don't you do sad. It. 0-6. Good God.
I'm also taking Maryland. Let's go Minnesota at Va Tech.
Virginia Tech.
Yes.
Good team. Had a tough week.
It'll be an NCAA tournament team. What are you feeling? Purdue at Florida State.
Purdue, I have 100. Florida State should be better. This is crazy to me. They're 1-7.
It just doesn't make any sense.
They have all these 4 or 5-star type recruits. I don't know. All right, let's keep it moving here.
BC at Nebraska.
This is probably the least watchable game in the entire field. I'm going to go with Nebraska at home. I'll take it. The Big Ten doesn't win the challenge this year.
We both watched the Detroit Mercy BC game, and that BC team is bad.
They're getting healthier, though, right?
I don't know. They're not.
Lamar Langford's back. Like, yeah.
I'm taking Nebraska. I'm going to say.
Okay, you're taking Nebraska. I'm switching to Boston College then.
Wow.
I think that I'm taking Boston College.
I'm going to say Derek Walker puts it on him. Georgia Tech at Iowa.
Iowa. These are so weak.
Iowa might win this game by 25. Right?
Yeah.
Am I missing a game?
I don't know if we did.
I skipped one.
Northwestern Pitt.
Jesus. Where is that game?
It's in Evanston. I'm going Northwestern.
I'm going Northwestern.
Northwestern is a 9-point home favorite on KenPom. Whew.
All right. There you have it, folks.
Another Big Ten needs to win this. The Big Ten's going out with a bang in the Big Ten ACC Challenge.
What are the they can't sweep.
No, they're not going to sweep.
What's the over-under you'd put it at? 9.5?
Sounds about right. I think we both picked mostly Big Ten team. Like, they should win a lot of these games. I got to get out of here, though. Let's wrap this up. Got to keep this moving. You're taking your time tallying these picks.
I picked 10 Big Ten teams.
Yeah, so,
I'll take the over. All right. Well, thank you for doing this, Dylan. I really appreciate your time this morning. I know you have a big, important press conference to get to. Tell Juwan I say hello. And you're not coming up for the game tomorrow, are you?
I'm not.
You are not. Okay. Well, until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, we believe in you.